Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
Bears, 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 football, football, football.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
The Bears.
They're bad.
We know more about Mitch. We know that he couldn't handle whatever they were trying to do with him this year, that didn't work. We know Adam Shaheen can't play, right? We finally admitted that. He just flat out can't play. Anthony Miller apparently can't run a route, and then he struggles to catch the ball. He is really a surprise. He's had a really rough year. Leonard Floyd, I think we confirmed what we knew about him, that it's flashy and every once in a while it shows, but it's not consistent.
But you hoped otherwise before the season,
didn't you? You hoped he was about to take a step forward. Yeah. And then Roquan, to me, he's the great mystery of the group because he had the personal issues. We still need the breakout game from him, and we still need him moving forward. And I think that this is one of the big issues with the Bears, is their player development.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Dating back 25 years, the Bears have gone from out of the playoffs to in a total of 5 times. They will have failed to return the following year 4 times, barring a miracle finish. Why does the franchise struggle so mightily with success?
I don't think the answer fits into a 5 at 5. The answer comes in a documentary. This is something that you need a seminar on the Peter Principle to fully understand. Because things go on at Hallis Hall that are very difficult to explain, and history has been repeating itself for decades, and I'm not sure why. There should be more than one Super Bowl trophy in that case out at Hallis Hall. This is an ongoing conversation. Unfortunately, it's an uncomfortable one, but it's a necessary one here in Chicago.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Still sitting here taking in everything that Mike Lombardi had to say. I think he articulated it well. I think we've been talking a lot about these issues and a lot about what he was saying and at drawing different conclusions. And I think when Matt Nagy is being asked if he's willing to give up play calling duties, he's being asked if he's willing to become the head coach.
That's what people are saying. That's the underlying principle of what we're referring to when we're asking that question. I think what Lombardi said was insightful and pretty refreshing. It wasn't attacking Mitch. It was assessing what's going on with the Bears this season. And one of the things coming out of this disappointing year, and the Bears have been as disappointing as any team in the league, is that you've got to look at your head coach just like you're looking at your quarterback, just as you're looking at every aspect of the operation. The one thing he didn't say that people will jump to, he's not saying fire Matt Nagy, okay?
Oh, he didn't say that?
No. And no. I think that what you have to understand here is what he's talking about, and I think what I believe, too, is that, you know, strong head coaches still have a place in the National Football League. And I think what he is, you know, fighting against is this trend toward play callers getting rewarded because they're innovators or they're guys who are just maybe deal with one side of the football. Matt Nagy can still become a very good head coach with the Chicago Bears. There's still a lot to like about him as an individual and as a leader. I like the way he creates a culture. I like the way he handles people. I like the way he represents the organization. But for them to get out of this rut where they put themselves in, I do think he needs to adjust and adapt and learn from this. And that's one of those ways.
312-644-6767. We have a lot of people want to react to that interview. We'll start with George. George is in Old Town. Morning, George.
Morning, George.
God, I really want to punch him in the mouth, Michael Lombardi, because look, it took Michael Jordan 5 years to develop. I'm not saying Mitch is Michael Jordan. I'm just saying you've listed so many things wrong with the Bears that the whole team has been dysfunctional. Matt Nagy's still a great coach. They're having a bad year. The Packers were 6-9-1 last year. Lombardi, you're going to get rid of Aaron Rodgers for the Packers on that, you idiot? Look, they got to come back. They got to fix a lot of things. They got to bring in some competition, but they'll be back next year.
George, you're comparing Mitchell Trubisky and Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not comparing.
Okay.
All right, he's listening. Well, he's listening. Yeah, I think that that's where you lose people. Was
whimpering
when
and crying and screaming all the way.
You try to invoke the Rodgers, and you don't have Aaron Rodgers. If you had Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback and you were 4-6, you'd have a lot of different conversation because you have Aaron Rodgers.
How many other quarterbacks have gotten the opportunities that Trubisky has gotten here? It's going to be two full seasons, part of one season, everything built around
him. Is it 35, 36 starts? Where are we?
It's going to be 36 if he plays on Sunday.
Okay.
And that's
a lot of starts.
He's made 35 NFL starts. Look, I have more faith in Matt Nagy learning how to become a strong head coach than I do Mitch Trubisky becoming a viable starting quarterback.
How much more time do people need to see that he's not it? It's just unbelievable to me that the benefit of the doubt that some people give him, he's so poor.
I really do think, though, that there is sort of a vacuum at the top of the Bears here. And I don't just mean in the front office or anything. I'm talking about if you're a head coach, you have to be the head coach. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the guy in Detroit's doing anything. You know, he might be a rocket scientist, but it doesn't seem to show up on the field. And they're complaining that his defense is failing and he's not taking over play calling responsibilities with his defense. Mm-hmm. But his response to that is, Matt Patricia, I want to be the head coach. I want to be able to change a play. I want to be able to change a defense. I want to be able to. He worked for Belichick, so he wants to be Belichick. Unfortunately, not many people, and usually if you come from Belichick, you fail trying to be Belichick because he can do things that other people can't do. Belichick, the way that he made his name in the NFL was as one of the great, and I mean great, defensive minds. He was with Bill Parcells, and Parcells was the offensive guy, and Belichick ran those defenses, came up with game plans that won Super Bowls when they shouldn't have won Super Bowls, but he's a master at taking away what you want to do. But if you study what he does, he is involved in the offense. He's involved in special teams. He's certainly searching the rule book and going through that. There is no detail that is too small for him to approach. And when you look at Matt Nagy come out on Monday and talk, he can break down everything that happened with the offense. And he's asked about an interception, and he's said there was a crossing route, and he jumped the route, and he's not breaking down. I don't believe that he's breaking down the defensive tape the way he's breaking down the offensive
tape.
There's not enough time in the day to do it, and he's trying to solve his issues as a play caller. He's not trying to figure out why the defense allowed 17 points. He's trying to figure out why he only scored 7.
Because as a head coach, he's dissatisfied with the offensive coordinator.
That's exactly right, which is him.
See, and I think the other factors that you have to consider is head coaches can, in the way Lombardi put it, they can see the forest for the trees. And you know, you're not so deep in where you can't realize that when you're playing the Saints and you've only run the ball 7 times, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Or when you're playing the Chargers and you have, you know, 41 seconds left and you need to get a little closer, that you don't consider that in its totality because you're not looking at it from a head coaching perspective.
And
you're
you don't know what hash mark the guy wants the ball at or whatever.
You should know those things as a head coach, as an experienced, savvy head coach. And that's what I think is the underlying thing here, is that we'd like to see him make fewer mistakes or make fewer errors in judgment according to what we think is, you know, prudent. And it's happening too often for us to believe that he can do both jobs.
Matt is in Chicago. Good morning, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Good morning, boys. I agree with a lot of things Lombardi says, but I thought it was interesting that he used Ditka as an example of a head coach that was over all three aspects of the game when Ditka really had nothing to do with the defense the year that won the Super Bowl.
Whoa. Hold on a second, Matt. What he said about Ditka was that his personality was reflected in his team, and that when you're a good head coach, when you're a strong head coach, your personality is reflected in your team. And I think
that you're in the meetings talking to each part of each coach about what you want to see done.
But Matt,
Ryan and Ditka
nearly come to blows game down in Miami?
You're making his point.
Ditka felt they needed to take Wilbur Marshall out of the game, take a linebacker out, and put in a nickelback to cover a wide receiver. And he and Buddy Ryan got into a heated argument where they nearly came to blows. Ditka was telling Buddy Ryan what to do, and Buddy Ryan was telling Ditka, I'm going to run my defense the way I want, and Ditka's telling him, you'll do what I tell you.
Yeah, because right or wrong, I'm the head coach.
That's right.
And this team is going to reflect me, and if we're going to go down, it's going to go down because of the decisions
that I
made.
And by the way, Dick was right. That was why they lost that game.
He was right in that case. So,
I mean, you're rewriting history a little, Matt, or you're not understanding exactly what was going on. So it's look.
What Lombardi was talking about was head coaches establishing identity, establishing a culture of accountability, all the things that somewhat are intangible, but also having a grasp of every aspect of the game, all three phases. And he did criticize Andy Reid, and I think some of those criticisms are valid. Andy Reid's had a terrific career, probably arguably a Hall of Fame career, and he has a tree that has a lot of branches of guys who
and
have succeeded.
Missing?
A Super Bowl championship.
That's right, a ring.
And what Lombardi essentially was saying was that if Andy Reid were a better, more complete head coach, he would have won a Super Bowl. He didn't put it in those terms, but he didn't have to.
312-644-6767. Back with your calls, Mullion Hall on the Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Mully and Hall flashback.
Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
He's not a head coach. He's a play caller, right? He's not a head coach. He lets Chris Tabor run the special teams. He lets Chuck Pagano run the defense, and he coaches the offense. He's an offensive coordinator slash head coach. So we're in an era of the NFL today because we want more people want to have a say in everything. We've lost the head coach. We've lost the head coaching position. That's a dinosaur.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. That's Michael Lombardi. And there's a lot of truth.
There's
to what
a lot
he's
of
saying.
Truth to what he's saying, and yet the counter to that is that you know what? True, and you missed the good old days, and you missed the Ditkas and the Parcells and the Coughlins, and at the same time, the last two representatives from the NFC in the Super Bowl were essentially play callers, were essentially guys that he was just bemoaning.
Okay, who won?
The advance of Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl.
Okay,
and Sean McVay didn't. But I think
don't you think Doug Peterson has a little bit more than just play caller on his resume?
I would think that knowing him, yes, and looking at how that team was structured, absolutely. But I think that when you look at his background, no. Because he was more of a guy that went to the Eagles with what? Why? He had Andy Reid's offense. He had many of the same credentials that Matt Nagy came to Chicago with. They believed in him in Philadelphia for many of the same reasons that Chicago believed in Matt Nagy. So while I still agree with the premise that Mike put out there, I understand why people push back against it because it's like, hey, get with it. It's working. Not always.
But it's interesting because we are in an era where the NFL is defined by Sean McVay. And, if anyone was within sneezing access of him, they may have gotten a drop of glory on them. So let's hire him. It got that crazy.
Well,
and it's successful. It's worked because he's been this great offensive mind. And guess what? It didn't work very well against the Bears.
How long will the trend last?
And
let's talk again and revisit this in February, because you know what? If John Harbaugh or Mike Tomlin or Pete Carroll win a Super Bowl, how will that affect the coaching industry? What will happen then? Because those are guys that when you talk about one side of the football, you need to excel it and be the offensive innovator. I don't know that in Cincinnati they're thinking that's such a good idea. In Green Bay, okay, if Matt LaFleur wins the Super Bowl, then Lombardi is going to have to explain why he believes still in the true head coach. So I think this is cyclical, and it's one of these things that right now in Chicago we're looking at it because we're seeing examples that we have cited and ad nauseum almost of Matt Nagy not being a good head coach because he's obsessed and preoccupied with being the play caller.
And the play calling is not working. And that's another element of it. You know, well,
biggest problem.
That's the biggest problem. If the offense was going great guns and the defense was struggling a little bit due to injury or not getting turnovers, I think we would chalk that up to the idea that they changed coordinators and there is a little bit of a difference and things are cyclical and the injuries, and they were so healthy last year. But the fact is they are really struggling on offense. It's not like, I mean, Matt Nagy has to dig deeper every game trying to come up with a solution to his problems. And he is unwilling, apparently, to go old school, to run the ball, to do what Sean McVay did in that game.
To adjust. And in fairness to his point of view, and he certainly isn't pushing back at this, but I think you have to consider all these things. It worked last year, Mully, and I think that's why. It reinforced the way that he took over, and it reinforced his approach to being a head coach, because in his first go at it, his first go round, he went 12-4, and he was the coach of the year. He did the job better than anybody else in the league in a voting of by his, you know, whoever votes for that. And I think when you look at why he's behaving this way, why he's taking this approach to the job, it's because he's been rewarded for it.
And I was trying to say sneezing distance, and I just could not come up with that, sadly. And I'm not going to blame me.
Bless you.
I'm going to blame the Bears for playing a night game on Sunday and ruining my week. That's where I'm going.
I think that's appropriate.
Chad's listening on radio.com.
Hey, Chad.
Good morning, Chad.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to make a quick point on Lombardi's take on our defense. I think it's a lazy take and unfair to point any blame on our defense. We're not dominant like we were last year. But we're very good, and it's to blame our offense for handicapping us with play calling on defense, anything. I just think it's crap that's the take he took.
Well, I don't think that was his main take. I mean, he was assigning a responsibility because the defense has not been as good as it was in 2018.
But I like the call, because I do think that one of the lazier takes that we're seeing around town is this idea of, like, hey, what's wrong with Khalil Mack? Why is Khalil Mack so bad? Why isn't Khalil Mack doing more? Look, you just played a game where they ran the ball how many times versus throwing the ball, right? It was like 34-18. I don't even know what it was. I don't have the sheet in front of me, but it jumps out at you.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you have a very limited number of plays in which Mack can make a huge impact. And when you watch the game, as any offense will do, the first thing you do is account for him. And the reason they ran the ball as much as they did, mm-hmm, is because they wanted to stay out of a situation where he's coming at them. And the one thing we haven't seen enough of this year is the Bears with the lead rushing the passer. That's when the defense is at their best.
And that's the offense's fault. And I think also when you cited Sean McVay previously, you have to give him credit for devising a game plan to neutralize Khalil Mack. They had a lead. They did not let Jared Goff drop back and turn the ball over the way he has so often. And this is a guy that in his previous 16 games had 17 fumbles.
Right.
When you're facing Khalil Mack, what do you want to do? Not fumble, because he's going to want to get there in a bad mood. Khalil Mack,
he only threw one pick.
But you're right. Khalil Mack did not get on the stat sheet. He's gone three games without a sack. That's unfortunate, but it's not necessarily fair to say, to ignore the role that the offensive game plans have that are scheming against him or to avoid him, that plays a big role.
And I'm not saying Mac had a great year or anything like that. He's played out of his mind. It's been he's a human being who is on a team that can't get a lead, so his greatest skill, pass rusher, is not being used often enough. And by the way, guys, guess who the NFC Defensive Player of the Week is?
Aaron Donald.
That's exactly right. Why? Because he played the Bears.
He played the Bears in that offensive line.
Ay, ay, ay. All right, we got a lot to talk to, and we'll get to all of it. 312-644-6767. There should be, and we'll get to all of them.
And we haven't even mentioned Jose Mourinho being appointed the new manager of Tottenham.
I think we'll do that on the podcast. You just played Crying and Screaming from the president. Mm-hmm. It's a pity he didn't say Howling and Screaming.
See,
or Screaming and Howling.
Well, one of these days, maybe.
Or Screamers and Howlers.
When he gets hauled off, he'll be howling, perhaps.
Oh, stop.
Okay.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It just kept getting tighter and tighter, so I felt like I could keep fighting through it, but they didn't let me finish it out.
What happens if he plays good against a team that's out of it, right? What happens if that happens? To me, you have to judge him based on when the games are on the line, that Ram game. I mean, you know, you've got to judge him, and you've got to make a decision, and you've got to move forward. I mean, you know, they talked about it in The Sopranos. You have to make a timely decision, right? That's the creed of the mafia. Well, in the NFL, timely decisions are really important because the thing that we've learned in this life, whether it's been in history or whether it's been in the NFL, is too late. You're too late to recognize the problem. You make more mistakes.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. That's Michael Lombardi.
Yes, he was talking about Matt Nagy, obviously always talking about Mitch Trubisky. We'll hear from both those guys today at Hallis Hall. Matt Nagy at 11:45 is scheduled to address the media, and Mitch Trubisky later after that during open locker room.
Let me ask you something. What do you reckon we'll learn? And by that I just mean, will we find out that it's day-to-day with Mitch?
The extent of the injury, I think, and probably that it will be day-to-day. I can't imagine him having a hip pointer that prevented him from playing the final 3.5 minutes of a game on Sunday night. 3 days later, like, okay, he's full participation. Then that's going to create a lot of skepticism, a lot more skepticism.
I was going to say, there's already a lot of skepticism.
Yeah. My sense is that not knowing, you know, how severe it is, we'll get a little more clarity. There'll be a lot of questions about whether his availability this week by design, and they won't make a decision until they have to. And if that's Sunday, so be it.
312-644-6767. Bobby's in the loop. Good morning, Bobby.
Morning, Bobby.
Hey guys, thanks very much for taking my call, and just thanks so much for all you guys do. Generally, you make these disappointing seasons a lot easier to weather. So I just want to say thanks very much for that. You know, my question stems from the fact that the broadcast this past Sunday seemed to highlight just how dysfunctional this team and this organization is at every level. You know, we all know that there's plenty of on the field issues which are tough to watch, but then we've got the coach who is so focused on his BU play sheet that he doesn't seem to have a feel for the game as a whole, and then managed to create a media stir by pulling his quarterback out in the last couple minutes, something which, you know, probably could have been dealt with pretty easily if, you know, he and the Bears PR department had any sort of communication with one another. And then the whole time we're forced to watch Ryan Pace hidden in his little press box, you know, wondering what he's thinking, because for whatever reason he doesn't want to step out in front of, you know, a season that's as disappointing as any that I can remember. And, you know, I just want to get your guys' thoughts on the Bears organization, because I know that, you know, people like to call for Ted Phillips' job and the McCaskies to sell the team, and neither of those things are going to happen, but you know, without a miracle, this will be the fifth time in the last 20 years that, or I'm sorry, the 15th time in the last 20 years that the Bears make the playoffs or miss the playoffs. And, you know, that sort of failure seems to suggest that there's, you know, something organizationally wrong with this team. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Thanks very much.
Well, in reverse order, definitely there's some systemic issues that we've addressed. And, you know, it's an ongoing conversation, and it's been ongoing for the last several decades. There's an organizational issue when you have a team that can't win a playoff game in once a decade. That's not often enough, and it's not good enough. I don't want to beat up Matt Nagy for the BU stuff, because last year we were praising his ingenuity and individuality. And I think that's got to be fair. If you're going to compliment him then, it's hard to criticize that aspect of him now, even though he needs to be better as a head coach. And as for, I will agree with this, that moment on the sideline that turned into a holiday commercial,
yeah,
that didn't have to happen on the sideline on national television. It could have happened in the locker room. If your quarterback was impaired to the point where everybody understood what was going on and he was injured, replace him without explanation. Explain it later. Win the game now.
I got to tell you, I think he's right about one thing, which is that this has been as disappointing a season as we can remember in a long time. And part of that is that they were good last year and the expectation was that they would be better. Part of it is they weren't afraid. They weren't shying away from talking about a Super Bowl run when they were in training camp. And the only people that weren't on board and the only thing that really gave me pause, and we talked about it quite a bit, is that the fine folks in Las Vegas, Nevada, had them at like an over-under of 9 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, didn't make a ton of sense. I think their over-under was 6.6, and they won 12 games the year before. And the idea that that Vegas still didn't believe in them was very interesting to me. And I didn't understand exactly what they were thinking, but I guess you look at what they do, and they do a really good job of evaluating a lot of different elements, including maybe what we missed was the opponents. Maybe we missed the Packers taking the jump that they jumped. It seemed like the Packers, it wasn't about – they'd spent a lot of money.
I was skeptical.
But the young coach,
yeah,
with the veteran quarterback, that looked like a train wreck waiting to happen.
Looked like a bad marriage, an arranged marriage.
And there was a feeling that maybe the Vikings had gotten to their point and couldn't kick the door in.
Made that crap up.
And instead, they ended up
having a pretty good year. It's an interesting point you make about the level of disappointment. And I wonder, and maybe we can talk about this tomorrow in terms of the context of Chicago sports. What does this season remind you of? Here's what it reminds me of in the context of the Bears. And you were around, and I think you'll remember this too. 2007, you reported to Bourbonnais, and the Bears had just come off a Super Bowl loss to the Colts, and they had 21 of 22 starters returning. And then they made a trade for a guy, a defensive tackle named Darwin Walker. And everybody thought, like, oh my gosh, how is this happening? How is a team this good getting better? And they had a tumultuous offseason, which I think the parallel is also to be made to this year. They kind of got a little drunk with success after 2006. And I think this team, without even having won a playoff game, got a little drunk with success. And 2007 was a colossal disappointment. And it reminds me emotionally for people expecting a return to the Super Bowl that year and this season getting to the Super Bowl. That's what it feels like. It was that the unfulfilled expectations, and that's the last time I can remember expectations being as high as they were heading into this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back because I was covering that team.
Yeah.
when I'm thinking of the one before when Jim Miller was the quarterback. And
2003.
And they had the 13-3 season kind of out of nowhere.
Oh, no, 2002, I'm sorry. It was 2001 they had the 13-3 season out of nowhere.
Basically, Dick Geron was getting fired. And Jerry Angelo had just come in, and then they went 13-3, and then Dick ended up getting a contract extension. So Jerry didn't get to make the move that he was going to make.
Right.
It sort of prolonged and then they had a bad year. They didn't make the playoffs the next year. And I want to say Jim got hurt. I don't remember all the details of it.
So you're comparing it to 2002 based on the success they had in 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because the
2001
kind of came out of nowhere. And then 2002, you thought, oh, well, you know, they got this kid Urlacher. They got the two big guys up front. And then it all just kind of went to hell. And I think that is very embittering when you have those years where it's almost like the year itself, the badness of a season erases the success of the year before. It puts it in question. So, like, what Ryan Pace has been here now. This is his fifth year. They had the first three. They were dead last in the division. Then they pop up and win the division. Now they're in third place. It's almost like, is this the norm?
You're right, though.
Was that the exception?
You're right, though, because of that. Because you're returning to the rule and winning becomes the exception.
Yeah.
In great organizations, it's the opposite.
Yes.
In great organizations, you can have something like a 6-10 year or 7-9, and you can say that's a blip on our radar. With the Bears, it's ordinary. That's the expected almost, because people have become so desensitized to losing. And so when something like last year happens, we overreact to that success, even though it's relative success, because you didn't win a playoff game. And you returned this season like you had just been runner-ups in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the playoff loss was considered a fluke by the people that went through it. So that made you feel like it was a fluke because they felt it was a fluke. And then it was all about this. They did that dumb double doink and the bad kicker and things would be different. But they never fixed that spot.
No, they didn't.
So why
still a problem.
Why would we think that? 312-644-6767. Charlie is on the road. Morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Charlie.
Well, the one thing I will say, I mean, it doesn't matter how long I've been a Bears fan, but the one constant has been the same constant for a long time. The Bears, an organization, they have been bad, very bad. And, you know, every once in a while, I think last year was a blip because, you know, other than 85, 86, you know, the year before that, they weren't really a playoff team. They haven't never addressed the issue that they've had for a long, long time. Our nemesis from the North have had three different Hall of Fame quarterbacks. We've had one. The Bears organization has had one. And some guy from way back when that I never watched play, Sid Luckman, I know he was great. I've read.
Right.
But other than that, who have they had? You've wasted Walter Payton. You've wasted defensive talent there, Hall of Fame talent. You've wasted all. You wasted Dick Butkus in his prime. You've never addressed the situation that is the offense that's in the room. You've never addressed the quarterback situation.
Well, you've addressed it. You just haven't done it correctly. I mean,
right.
Jim Harbaugh was a first-round draft pick, right? And that didn't work out here. And when Dave got here, he ended up getting rid of Jim Harbaugh because basically they went out for their first preseason game and everything, you know, went to hell, and there was all the booing and all that stuff. So that's one. You got Rex, and that's another one. And now you got Mitchell Trubisky. That's a number two overall pick in a draft.
The big picture question that is raised, I think, it's a good call, is that you worry that when you look at this defense and coming into the season, and as recently as September 29th when they beat the Vikings and they beat them handily, we were talking about this as a generational-like defense, right?
Yeah.
Are you wasting the best years of these players that you have,
wow,
when healthy and when together,
right,
are as good as a unit in the National Football League as you're going to see on a Sunday? So if you continue to swing and miss at the quarterback position, if you continue to be, you know, a team, an offense that has more three and outs than every team in the league except for the Jets, what are you doing and how close are you coming to wasting the prime of some of these defensive players?
And I apparently skipped Cade McNown. I guess I've blocked all that out of my life because that was a horror
session.
That's
a bad idea.
Yeah. They haven't made the right decision.
Cade,
and you know what? I mean, here's the thing, David. Like, you could go out and get some journeyman guy and bring him in here, mm-hmm, and have the defense. But does the coach want that? Because he wants to win on offense. And this is what we're talking about when we're talking about him being an offensive coordinator or a play caller rather than a head coach.
Great question. Great question. The question is, how much will this season, which you just described, it will scar people, right? It'll have,
yes,
an effect on people for a while. What effect does it have on Matt Nagy? Does it scare him into realizing that what you just said is true? He's not here to run an offense. He's here to win a division. Get to the Super Bowl, then talk to me about your great scheme.
Man, I mean, you know, when we stare into the abyss, I just had a flash of Cade McNown. I was covering that team, man. Oh, my God. That was an absolute train wreck.
I was fortunate to miss it.
You are really lucky.
From afar. I was stuck in Notre Dame football.
Oh, my gosh.
That abyss at that time.
Whew.
That wasn't very pretty either.
All right. We have callers that want to check in, and I'm sorry. We've run out of time. We got to bring in Dan and Connor next, and we'll be chatting with them, but I'm sure they'll take your calls. If not, call back tomorrow.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be back here.
Yeah.
We're planning on continuing to do our show regardless of what
Why?
The news is out of Hallis Hall. It's our livelihood.
My hip feels fine. How about yours? Although my ankle's a little bit sore.
I'm having a back issue. I'll go get a shot today.
Okay.
312-644-6767. Keep calling. These guys will take your calls, but we're going to sadly have to talk to Dan and Connor next. Not sadly talk to them. We love talking to them. Don't let anyone tell you different. We just can't talk to you. Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.